welcome to the 64th episode of the Brick House Podcast. I'm Bob Johnson.
And I'm Matt Baker. Bob, by the release of this podcast, Summer League will be over.
Right.
What do we do then? Because we'll have a few Olympic games, I guess, but NBA basketball is pretty much shut down for 3 months or so after this.
Yeah, we're about to go into serious withdrawals, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Jeremy Lin has trademarked the name Brook Lin.
Okay.
Brook-Lin.
Sure.
Reminder to our listeners, Jeremy Lin is a Harvard graduate, and he said, you know, if Brooklyn Nets want to use Brooklyn Nets, go ahead. You know, they're free to do that.
Right.
I wonder if Jeremy Lin would actually get trademark money if they were to use that, though.
Brooklyn. Okay.
Brooklyn.
Okay.
You know, this Hall of Fame class is going to be amazing with Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant going to be first ballot Hall of Famers.
Definitely.
But there's another player that may join them. It's rumored that Kevin Garnett is contemplating retirement ahead of his 22nd season.
I read the quote said he would really like to come back for 82 more games of yelling at Zach LaVine, but he doesn't know if his body can handle it. That's the quote I read. His knees. Sorry. I got that mixed up.
It would be tough with him as an executive, too. If he had to wear a tie, that might actually hinder his, you know, throat's projection ability.
Yeah.
He did say that he really would like to join the team because he expects them to be in the playoffs this upcoming season.
Right.
But he's not sure if he can, to which the reporter said, what does that mean? To which Garnett said, I don't know. last year, he averaged just 3.2 points, 3.9 rebounds, 1.6 assists in 38 games for the Timberwolves. And he is under contract this upcoming season for another $8 million.
I'm not too good on former Hall of Fame classes, to be honest, but you would think Garnett, Kobe, and Duncan would have to be one of the best there ever has been, right?
Probably so.
Because there was Stockton and Jordan.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd have to look back. I know Iverson and Yao Ming are going to be together. That's a funny pairing.
That's a pretty good, I like that one.
This next segment, I'm going to call, it seems like there's been enough time passed that execs and players alike are starting to explain their free agency decisions. Just for brevity's sake, we'll call it that.
Yeah, that's a good quick one.
Pat Riley hasn't spoken to Dwayne Wade, but he says he has been crafting a very long email to him, and he will send it when it's finished.
Good for him.
Chandler Parsons was putting Mark Cuban on blast a little bit. His quote to Tim McMahon this past week, I obviously thought I was going to be in Dallas a lot longer than I was, but it's a business, and Mark has to make decisions. He makes mostly all of them, so this was on him. How far we've come from Mark Cuban and Chandler Parsons signing a contract in a nightclub.
Right. Yeah, I wonder who took Chandler Parsons out for a week-long dinner escapade before he broke his heart.
Atlanta is probably getting drunk right now after reading an interview that Dwight Howard gave to the Mike and Mike show. He said again just this past week that he did not get the ball enough in Houston. To which this guy, Fegan, on Twitter pointed out that Dwight Howard led the NBA last year in post touches and was second in the NBA in paint touches.
Whoa.
But he did not get the ball enough last year.
Yeah. How much more does he want it?
And, of course, you know, Mike Budenholzer is not famous for throwing the ball and dumping it down into the post, but rather having a pick-and-roll offense.
Right.
That Dwight, I read a couple weeks ago, said that he went into that interview with the Atlanta Hawks and was very humble and open to the idea of listening to the coaches, being coached, doing whatever necessary it takes to win. He went on with another interview with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he said, my back hasn't been an issue, and I don't think I will ever have an issue out of my back for the rest of my career.
I'm looking at that quote right now. Okay.
Not that NBA player has ever gone into a season thinking like, you know what, this season, counting on a back injury.
Yeah.
You know?
I apologize, but during this new contract, I will have a back injury. He's going to switch his number to 8. Dwight Howard is here.
Yeah, he said it was a biblical reference. I'm not familiar with the number 8 in the Bible. I know there's a lot of 12s in there from which he switched from. The same reporter asked him about his year on the Lakers and was saying that she read that Dwight was consuming the equivalent of 24 Hershey bars a day in sugar.
Yes.
And asked him, well, could that be true? Dwight, he had a hard time in L.A. Maybe this is how he was coping.
Yeah.
The quote was, I was eating a lot of crazy food back in the day. I've slowed down. But sometimes during the summer, I have those moments I want to eat everything, be a kid again, and I don't realize I'm 30. I'm going to eat the right things. I was a big candy guy. It's tough to wean off that sugar. Sodas weren't a problem. The biggest problem were Skittles, Honey Buns, Twix, that kind of sugar I was consuming at a high rate.
Yeah. Fail to see the problem here, Bob. I have one site here. It says that the number 8 in the Bible represents a new beginning, meaning a new order of creation and man's true born-again event where he is resurrected from the dead into eternal life.
Oh, I can see why he won't have back problems. You don't have back problems in the eternal life.
Yeah. 8 is the number of Jesus whose name in Greek adds up to 888. I guess if...
There must be a lot of extra letters in the Greek alphabet.
Yeah, there's about 888 of them.
This next segment is real short, but it's called What Happens When You Give Bradley Beal a Max $130 Million Contract, Matt?
What happens, Bob?
He starts incorporating samurai training into his off-season workouts.
Sure, he signed the deal. He can play with swords.
The Warriors are chasing $20 million a year for advertisements on their
jerseys. Can you repeat that? Oh, okay.
$20 million a year for advertising on the Golden State Warriors jersey.
I should have let you finish the sentence before I jumped in asking you to repeat it.
Yeah, I'm not sure which Silicon Valley company it's going to be. I assume it'll probably be Apple or Facebook, one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
To remind you, to put in some perspective, the Sixers got $5 million a year from StubHub. So we'll see how that goes for the Warriors. This is not for the next season, but the following one.
Right.
J.J. Redick has been active on Twitter this summer, basically defending Kevin Durant and other free agents' decisions to play where they want, and also saying that the people freaking out over the money, they got to put it in the right perspective.
Uh-huh.
J.J. Redick's all about the perspective here, Matt. So this is what he said about the super team in Golden State. He said, since Miami formed their super team in 2010, there have been 5 different champs in 6 different seasons. So all this complaining about competitive balance is trash. Thanks, J.J. Redick.
Thank you, J.J.
I hope you enjoy losing to the Golden State Warriors for the next 17 seasons.
The Clippers just signed Brandon Bass today, so I'm not sure you want to make that claim.
Oh, yeah. Right. The Draymond of Southern California. Patrick Ewing is an author of a children's book.
Oh, man.
The title, Matt, is called In the Paint.
Course it's
not about having your back to the basket, but it is about painting.
Mm-hmm.
Children's painting book by Patrick Ewing.
Children's painting book.
That's correct.
Yeah. That works. When I think of Patrick Ewing, I think of that. Is it a how-to book?
I haven't bought the book yet. It's on my Amazon wish list.
Yeah.
But now you know what to get me for my birthday. You know, Patrick Ewing's ex-wife wrote a fiction novel titled Brick House. So we are now, just a few degrees separated from In the Paint.
Yeah.
We should probably bust out some finger paints for one of these episodes.
In the book, Ewing reveals that since he had art on his credit card, people have started asking him for paintings as well as autographs, which makes no sense. But we will go with it.
Art on his credit card?
Because
he buys art, people want him to paint art?
Recently, I had my art on a credit card. So maybe he had a custom credit card with a picture of his art on it. I'm also in the paint when I'm off the basketball court. I've loved to paint since I was your age. I like to paint landscapes or outdoor scenes from places I've been or pictures I've seen. I'm a visual person. If I see something, I have to paint it. Which, wow. If you read it in a different tone, that last line could be a little creepy. More of like a I must have you type thing.
you know, when I'm handing my credit card to a waiter, you know, they often give me a compliment too.
Yeah.
One of which that I recognize is completely hollow way to, you know, try and get a bigger tip out of me.
And what is that?
Well, you know, it could be anything.
Oh, you're not saying something specific. You're just saying something.
It's just like, did you enjoy your meal? Yeah, I did. Here's my credit card. It's like, you have really nice eyes. I'm I'm giving you an extra $5, mister. Thank you.
Bob Johnson.
I do have nice eyes.
Bob Johnson. I've never met one of those before. Are you of the famed Johnson family?
Yeah, I just find it hilarious that Patrick Ewing is handing his credit card to people, and people are just like, oh, hell, this is very nice. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Great art, or maybe they recognize you're worth millions and would like to get some of that.
This next section, another quick one, is Jaylen Brown funny or just a crazy MF-er? Asked if he was going to take some time off after Summer League, Jaylen Brown replied, I can rest when I die.
Yeah.
He's serious.
He's fairly young, too, so.
Won't be dead for a while. Andre Iguodala was on a radio show, The Breakfast Club, in the Bay Area this past week. And he said, now that KD's on the team, I can finally admit that the Thunder were the best team last year in the league in the playoffs. They were better than us. They were better than Cleveland. They were the best team in the playoffs. They should have won a championship. Which is really like taking a 50-pound bag of salt, cutting it open, and dumping it all over the wounds of Oklahoma City fans.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to help them sleep a lot easier at night. That's a heck of a mental screw job there he's trying to play on him, if that's how it's going.
Next segment, Phil Jackson, Idea Factory. Phil Jackson's full of ideas. Here's his latest. They include the 4-point line, as well as extending the shot clock from 24 to 30 seconds to match the college game clock. Phil will give you his reasons why. Quote, why not have a 4-point line about 35 feet out? It wouldn't be long before players will get reasonably comfortable shooting from out there. And having a 4-point line would certainly serve to enable teams to catch up in what are now blowout games. And as the 30-second shot clock, this would give offenses more time to get low post players involved, make defenses work harder, and encourage more passing and player movement. Matt, do you think the 30-second shot clock is a way to make the triangle more relevant, perhaps? A way to get low post players more involved.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you give Steph Curry 6 more seconds, it's not going to change shooting teams at all. And the 4-point line is not going to change them, because he's just going to keep shooting 4-pointers. So I don't know if that gets... It might... No, I don't. I don't think it will get low post players more involved.
But Phil Jackson is keeping himself and his quotes in the media, no matter what. I mean, they don't even have to be good quotes. People just publish Phil Jackson whenever he opens his mouth.
It's the off season, so he's just sitting in Montana, awaiting for random arrivals from Joakim Noah. And
in summer league, the Sacramento Kings are about as effective as they are in the regular league.
Oh man,
this year going 0-5. We told you last week that they have 22 players on their roster, with only one of them being a point guard, and that point guard, who may not be available if he goes to jail for beating his wife.
Sure.
The Kings, after they made a trade with your Phoenix Suns, ended up having 3 first-round draft picks.
Yeah. How many guards did they take, Bob?
They selected 0 guards in that draft. However, they did play against the San Antonio Spurs in the Summer League, who drafted Dejounte Murray at 29.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Kings on July 15th, he had 20 points and 9 assists.
Yeah.
This has got to burn the Kings a little extra, I would hope, if they had any awareness of what they missed out on. But they did pass on Dejounte Murray with all 3 of their first-round draft picks.
Including the pick right before that, right?
Didn't including the pick right before that, where they picked a 6'10 center and decided to play him at point guard.
Yeah. SI's Ben Golliver I think, encapsulated in this paragraph basically all of our thoughts. So okay. I was going to read it to you.
Please.
The King's ongoing ability to be terrible in new and strange ways is remarkable. During their opener against the Raptors, Sacramento scored just 13 points in the second and third periods, shot 28%, and had more turnovers, 19, than field goals, 15, or assists, 9, on its way to a 41-point loss in a 40-minute game. Second-round pick Isaiah Cousins, a point guard, was out with a groin injury, and the Kings' imbalanced roster was lacking in backcourt solutions. The loss to Toronto was so bad that Sacramento made a quick, desperate call to David Stockton, the 5'11 son of Hall of Famer John Stockton, in hopes of adding a little experience and structure at the point guard position. Why wasn't Stockton or any other competent point guards on the roster in the first place? Great question. Anyway, Stockton, who told Kings.com that he had been sitting at home, working out, getting ready for the upcoming season, deserves a gold star for parachuting into Las Vegas in record time. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to help the Kings avoid an 0-4 start. That's what I was thinking, is if you're lacking in point guard options on your normal roster, you probably want to have more guards on your summer league team than you do forwards. Was Stockton too good? Apparently he was too good for their team, but why didn't they just have him on there anyway? He clearly would have played because he came at a moment's notice. You would have thought that this would have been like Willie Cauley-Stein's chance to shine for them.
Uh-huh.
But he averaged 7 points, 5 rebounds, and shot 26% from the field.
Wow.
And it's not like he was one of those guys that only played one or two games like Booker and Trey Lyles and stuff. He played, I think, 4 games, 5 games.
Well, Matt, you know, what's the position that can really make or break a forward success on a basketball team?
A guard, Bob.
Yeah, point guard to get him the ball where
that
he
is
needs.
True. So if you're Willie Cauley-Stein and you already struggle on offense, if you have no one to get you the ball, it's a bunch of 7-footers out there trying to feed each other in the low post.
As much as we turn to the summer league for our basketball once the regular season ends, and try and apply success in the summer league to future success, or, you know, predict how players are going to do in the NBA based on how they do in summer league, it doesn't always work out that way.
Sure.
I was looking, some of the people who were real summer league standouts in the past 6 or 7 years, Anthony Randolph.
Mm-hmm. I think I was at that summer league.
Really?
Was it like Steph Curry's first year or second year?
I think so. I think he got drafted in 2009.
Yeah.
Right? Other players that were standout, Nicolos Chevelli. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that
right. I think we all remember him, Bob.
And Dante Green.
Oh, yeah.
Dante Green was either Kings or Rockets summer league team.
He was both. I think at one point he was traded like 3 times in the span of a few days. Yeah.
So at least the leading scorers in the Vegas Summer League this summer were Trey Lyles.
Right.
Is the leading scorer, 29 points per game. Devin Booker, who I don't think will be a fluke. He's going to be a future star in the NBA. And Jordan McRae was third leading scorer, who's a rookie on Cleveland last year.
Yeah, he played on the Suns a little bit last year, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, before signing with Cleveland and riding the bench to that championship.
In the Utah Summer League, the 3 highest leading scorers were all San Antonio Spurs.
Really?
Kyle Anderson, 23.7, Jonathan Simmons, 22 points per game, and Deontay Murray, 21, followed by Trey Lyles and Terry Rozier.
Wow.
The Spurs dominated Utah Summer League, at least statistically. So in the same vein of why we love Summer League but can hardly trust it, came up with some more Summer League fun facts from Draft Express.
Yeah.
Check these out, Matt. Only 2 rookie second-round picks have averaged a double-double in the Summer League. Lawrence Roberts, 55th pick in 2005, and Brandon Dawson, the 56th pick from the Clippers in 2015.
Clippers. Right.
Neither has ever recorded a double-double in the NBA.
Yeah. I think Lawrence Roberts, he was out of Mississippi State, I think, and I think at one point he was supposed to be a pretty big prospect that kind of fell in his senior year or something like that.
No, I don't remember that guy. In 2003, there were three rookies who averaged more points per game than LeBron James. One, Carmelo Anthony, who was the number three pick, mm-hmm. and had just coming off the national championship at Syracuse.
Right.
Also, Zarco Capercappa, who was the number 17 pick that year.
In the summer league, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Averaged more points than LeBron.
Yeah.
And Josh Howard, who was the 29th pick that year. Started off his NBA career pretty strong on the Mavericks. No rookie number one overall pick has scored more points per game than John Wall's 23.5 points per game mm-hmm. in 2010. No rookie number one overall pick scored fewer points per game than Derrick Rose's 9.5 in 2009. And Josh Akgognon, a 5'11", 26-year-old point guard, averaged 41.9 points per 40 minutes in the 2012 Summer League, which is the highest rate ever. Number 7 overall pick Ben McLemore did not have a single assist in over 150 minutes of play as a rookie during the 2013 Vegas Summer League.
Yeah, that doesn't shock me. I like it.
Byron Mullins averaged 2.6 rebounds in 20 minutes per game as a 2009 rookie, the fewest for any 7-foot rookie in the summer league.
Yeah.
I guess Kristaps averaged only 3.3 in 21 minutes per game, but that didn't really translate to the NBA as he averaged 10.2 per 40 minutes in his rookie year. Olden Polonese, who was drafted number 8 in 1987, played 5 games in the 2004 Summer League at age 39. And he had a PER of 7.1.
Oof.
Lou Williams averaged more than 6 turnovers per game in both the 2006 and 2007 Summer Leagues. Eric Bledsoe is the only player to average that many turnovers. And last, Sagana Ja played in the Summer League 7 times and shot 33% from the field or worse every time.
Oh, man.
Sagana Ja, it should be noted, has played in the NBA for 12 seasons. Matt, I've got a quiz for you that pertains to free agents and their salaries.
And now here's the host of the Brick House Game Show, Bob Johnson.
The Chicago Bulls on NBA Reddit put together a list of the top increases in players' salaries and the top decreases.
Okay.
So for you, Matt, for the game show today, I've got the top 10 increases per year percentage-wise, right? So what you're looking for is who made the biggest leap from last year's pay to this upcoming year's pay.
Okay.
The top 10 players. We'll see how many you can get, and then we'll go into the players who are making less money this year.
Okay. I would say Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson. He is the third highest increase with a 1,379% increase in pay.
Wow. Allen Crabbe.
Number two.
Yeah.
1,880% increase.
Let me. I need to keep note of who I'm guessing here, real quick. I know I've only
guessed
two.
Johnson and Crabbe, the two guys the Nets offered ridiculous contracts to.
I would say that Biombo.
Biombo didn't make the cut.
Okay, I guess he was on the end of his rookie deal, huh? So he would have been all right.
I mean, there's a lot of players that increase their salary by 400 or 500%.
Yeah.
These top 10 guys, though, just are players who went from a very minimal contract.
Oh, the Garrett Temple.
Garrett Temple, even him, is not on there.
Oh,
as
he
far
wasn't.
As percentage increase.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is going to be a lot tougher than I thought.
There's some crazy jumps from some players.
Let's see here.
Well, think of the guy who was playing at the YMCA a couple years ago, for starters.
The guy who was playing at the YMCA?
Right, and now is averaging almost 4 blocks per game in the pros.
Oh, yeah, Whiteside?
Whiteside.
Yeah,
yeah, he's the number one increase.
Yeah.
Probably the number one increase of all time for a player to go from a minimum deal to the very next year a maximum deal.
Yeah, he's making what? $800,000 last year, and then he's making...
Yeah, this year he'll be making $23.5 million more than he was last year.
Wow.
For a 2,397% increase in
pay. Wow.
You know, some people get an annual raise of 10%.
Yeah.
And are pretty happy with that.
Sure.
Try 2,300.
Yeah. Who are some of the other minimum guys? Now I'm all in my head.
One of them is an Australian guy who's compared often to a wallaby or a Tasmanian Delva.
What about Boban?
Boban, nope. Another guy famous for maybe convincing Steph Curry to join Under Armour and for photo bombing during interviews. Is the newest teammate of candy addict Dwight Howard.
Oh, Bazemore?
Kent Bazemore. Very good. $15.5 million more than he was making last season. So you got half of them now. I'll put you out of your misery.
Yeah.
The other players in order, Jordan Clarkson.
Okay.
And $11.7 million more than last year.
That's crazy. I don't even think about him because he was such a contributor for the Lakers that I always forget he's a second round pick.
You're just thinking of overpaid scrubs.
Yeah.
Dwight Powell is next, $8.4 million more, 995% increase. John Luehr.
Oh, yeah, Detroit. Former son.
Yeah. And then the other last two are Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore from the Bulls got a huge raise.
What did Etuan Moore get?
Whatever it was, it is $7.5 million more than he was making last year.
Well, you're still on the Bulls. No.
No, he got...
He's on the Pelicans now.
Yeah, he got offered the Pelicans contract. Hassan Whiteside said he didn't really do anything to celebrate his $98 million contract other than going to the zoo.
So Dellavedova celebrated a championship by going to a roller coaster park.
Do you think Hassan Whiteside brought the San Antonio newspaper article that offered Tim Duncan free zoo visits?
He just tried to pass himself off as Tim Duncan.
Or he showed up there. They're just like, didn't you just get a $98 million contract? He's like, yeah, but aren't you going to honor the same thing that the San Antonio Zoo offered Tim Duncan?
Yeah.
What, do you hate fucking basketball?
Yeah.
Alicia Tizui, a reporter, asked Hassan Whiteside, sorry for butchering your name there, that asked Hassan Whiteside what he spends doing the most time on his phone. His answer was really quick. Quote, Snapchat, easy.
Loves it. Snapchat, easy.
So this list that the Chicago Bulls Reddit user put together had a lot of players, obviously, that are making way more money than they were last year. But there are only 10 players in the NBA, aside from those who retired, of course, who are going to make less money this coming year than they did last year.
Wow.
Only 10.
Okay.
If you can name 5 of those, I will give you the win here.
Zaza Pachulia.
Bingo. $2.3 million less, 44% decrease in pay.
Okay. Al Jefferson.
Al Jefferson, correct. He's number 4 on the list. $3.8 million less, 27% pay cut.
Dwight?
Dwight, no, he got about the same thing that he opted out of in Houston.
Okay, let's see here. Would David West be getting less, or he would be getting more, because it's about the same?
I think he took the minimum 2 years in a row now, which is the same.
Okay.
One player is getting less based on a technicality of being banned from the NBA next year.
O.J. Mayo, they counted that just because he's getting less?
Yeah, he's getting 100% less than he got last year.
Yes, that would make sense.
One of them is previously one of the most overpaid players in the NBA.
Joe Johnson,
52% pay cut.
Yeah.
Another guy used to be Mr. Verticality. Now he's Michael Jordan's punching bag. And also must really like Corey Matthews. And Topanga.
Oh, because of the Boy Meets World. Oh, Hibbert. Yeah. Yeah.
Whose Twitter handle, Roy Meets World.
Roy Meets World. Wow. Who else is on that list?
Okay. The rest of the guys on the list. Nene Hilario took a 77% pay cut. Brandon Jennings is playing for only $5 million. That's $3.3 million less, or 40% pay cut. Grievous Vasquez took a small 24% pay cut. Eric Gordon is playing for
less. He took less. I was going to guess him, but then I thought
it's just $2.2 million less. 14.6%. And then the last guy is Chris Humphreys, who's playing for $600,000 less than he did last year. So
gotcha.
Almost the same. But of all the players who are making more money, these are the only 10 who are making less. O.J. Mayo being that technicality, too. And Chris Humphreys being almost identical contract.
Some of those are better than the people who are making way more there, Bob.
Right.
Yo mama is so fat.
Matt, our diss of the week comes from my new favorite basketball website.
It's Brick House?
It's called the Brick House Podcast.
Yeah.
BrickHousePodcast.com.
Right. I was going to say, is this a trick question?
It's an up-and-coming site. Our listeners should check it out. This one, we did a round two of our Brick House Roundtable, where we ask all of our Brick House analysts for their takes on the summer movements.
Right.
One of the questions involved what people expect for the Chicago Bulls in the upcoming season, and a friend of the show, Kevin Hirschner, had a great answer that I am giving our Diss of the Week honors to. So exactly what the question was the Bulls were adding Wade and Rondo. They lost Noah and Rose. So what did we expect from the Bulls this season? Kevin wrote, "By adding Wade and Rondo, this Bulls team immediately becomes the front runner in the East. I can't wait to watch this team. I also can't wait to try this new Instagram app and graduate from college in the spring. Oh, wait, I forgot this isn't 2010. clever writing from our Brick House analyst. Of course, there's lots of funny stuff in that blog post. I encourage you all to check it out.
On the next episode of Brick House.
This summer, like you said, Matt, we're going to have to start digging deeper into the barrel for some NBA topics, some basketball topics. I've got a few different ideas. One of them that I'd like to see this summer and have some input from our listeners who can tweet at us at BrickHousePod or email us, Bob or Matt at the BrickHousePodcast.com, is we want to hear and rank the greatest basketball movies of all time.
Ooh.
So send in your thoughts about that. I know, you know, a few of my favorites, of course, and, you know, for the past 10 years, I've really been working just like mentally, kind of like a, you know, homeless person talks to himself on a sequel to White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah.
So please, yeah, tell us what basketball movies you love. Tell us some other ideas for some Brick House topics, and we'll take all those into account, put them into a lottery ball, and select them completely randomly, just like the NBA does, without any bias.
Completely randomly. Before we close out, I have a quick answer to the best Hall of Fame year.
Oh, yeah, please.
I didn't go back too far, but in 2011, Artis Gilmore, Arvydas Sabonis, Chris Mullin, and Dennis Rodman were all elected.
Wow.
But in 2009, Stockton, Jordan, and David Robinson all went in together.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Dream teammates.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure there's some great ones. One year was Robert Parrish and James Worthy. But it looks like it's hard to beat Kobe, Duncan, and Garnett, really. Stockton, Jordan, Robinson, or Kobe, Duncan, Garnett, I would say. But what do I know?
Well, we'll talk about the Hall of Fame and much, much more. Send in your tweets at BrickHousePod. Review us on iTunes. Leave us some comments. It helps a lot. Please tell your friends. We're going to keep cranking out content for your enjoyment, and we'll talk to you soon on the next episode of Brick House.